during our time of Gita study, I began by reading the notes from Yogacharya O'Brien. It really was 2022 when she wrote these. And some of it you heard when you listened in 2022, but we know that often she goes off script, which means there are part of her notes that often she doesn't get to. So every time we hear it, it is fresh because we are new as well. So I'll share teachings from Yogacharya O'Brien and then add a little bit, and then we'll have time for sharing. Welcome to Gita Study. I'm happy to be with you. And let's take a moment to center ourselves in preparation for study. We have meditated and opened our hearts and minds to the infinite, to inspiration. We've offered the Gayatri Mantra, the prayer for illumination of consciousness. As we approach the study of the Song of God, the Bhagavad Gita, we keep in mind those prayers and that receptivity. May we approach our study with an open heart and an open mind. May we be aware of the teachers in our tradition of Kriya Yoga who have brought forth their insights of the Bhagavad Gita. And may we be aware of the sages, the rishis and rishikas bringing forth this wisdom, this illumined wisdom that has shined through the centuries and remains relevant for us now. Om, peace. Today we're focusing on chapter 2. This is where the teachings of Lord Krishna begin. He begins to teach Arjuna in his time of despair and confusion. We'll probably look at the first 15 verses or so in the second chapter, but I want to begin where I'm going to conclude this lesson. Krishna tells Arjuna, the wise one to whom happiness and unhappiness are the same is ready for immortality. The wise one to whom happiness and unhappiness are the same is ready for immortality. The wise person who has found that equanimity is ready to know the truth and to live the truth. Without that equanimity, of course, it's very hard to live the truth. So we're going to look at the trajectory now, going back to the journey that the seeking soul is on and the teachings from the Lord of love to guide his way. In chapter 2, the teachings of Lord Krishna begins with his laughter before he starts to offer the verbal teachings on the highest truth, discerning the real from the unreal, which is the focus of chapter 2 on Jnana Yoga and Samkhya Yoga. Before Lord Krishna starts to offer these teachings, he is preceded by his laughter. First, we have Arjuna's lament. I added that part. Maybe. His sorrow. He comes to his teacher, to his friend Lord Krishna. And before Krishna starts to teach him, he laughs. And that is such a poignant teaching in and of itself. We look at how we go to the guru and we have all of our trouble And then the guru laughs. There's an opening there. There's a levity that gives us some hope, possibly, if we don't sink further into despair. When we look at laughter, when we look at humor, it's a lightening up for us. Laughter comes when we can see something else. When we think about a situation with humor, what brings humor is another point of view. And we can see something beyond what seems to be real right in front of us. We can see the banana peel that the guy is about to slip on. Just somebody slipping is not so funny. But when they have a joke and they show the banana peel, it's part of the humor of it all. There's something about laughter that says, oh, there's something that's seen here that Arjuna is not seeing yet. There's something that's seen that we can't yet see. This is indicative of what it foretells. What's going to come now with the teachings, which is, of course, a higher view than what Arjuna is currently seeing. There's a step back from the situation itself that invites a higher view. Prior to this occurrence, Arjuna wants to go out into the center of the battlefield between the opposing armies. He wants to see who's there. He wants to see what the situation is. He wants to evaluate, and then he's right in the middle of it. So think about that metaphor for us. What is it like when you have a challenge in your life and you are in the middle of it? What happens? What he says is, let me see what this situation is. There's some usefulness to that, what Arjuna says. Let me see what I'm facing. Let me see what's happening here. What am I called to do or be in this situation? What obstacles am I facing? Sidebar, they are there. Right? And what are my options? All of that. There's a time for all of that. But then there has to be a way out of that position, which is in the middle. What happens is that Arjuna gets stuck in the middle, and his mind begins to move from one position to the other. He basically sees just two options. Can we relate? Yes, one time we experienced that. Mm-hmm. He sees that he can fight, which he assesses to be a terrible option, having to go to war with his own relatives, and the harm that will come from the battle. He sees that as a terrible option. And on the other side of that, he sees pulling out of the battle altogether. Inaction. Not doing anything. It's those two things that he sees. And that is the seed, in a sense, of doubt. Because the mind is moving back and forth between those two options. So just think about that in your own life. When you have a challenge and you're in the middle of it, generally that's what the mind does. You say, well, I could do this or I could do that. And maybe there are a lot of tributaries to that little river on this side or that little river on that side. But basically, doubt is the mind moving back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You just wear yourself out trying to decide, should I do this or should I do that? I don't really like either of the two options, and I don't know which I should choose. So I want to begin talking a little bit about doubt and its role in the spiritual path. Because like many things that we encounter, there is a usefulness to it. And there is a debilitating component as well. Doubt can become an entry point on the path. It can be, in a positive sense, a way in which we turn back to be receptive to higher truth, or it can be simply debilitating and take us into confusion and despair. As an entry point to the path, doubt is this juncture where we come to question the way things are, the way that we've been living, the choices before us. We start to see that things are not the way that we once believed they were. We start to see through the impermanence of things in the world as the source of our security, as the source of our happiness. We start to see through that, but we don't know where to go. And so we have doubt. This is so familiar. We can't live the way that we've been living, but we don't know where else to go or how else to go. In a way, Arjuna's struggle is reflected there. With that doubt, he can't proceed in the way that he has proceeded before. With all of his training and with all of his wisdom. Sidebar. This is like hitting the bottom, right? In recovery. This is like hitting the bottom. I don't know what to do. Arjuna is at an impasse, and he begins to doubt what the way before him is. So if we look at it, that doubt is actually what provides the moment of turning to the Lord. He gets to that place, he feels incapacitated. He says, I can't see a way out of my sorrow. And that becomes a turning point. That is often what brings us to the path, isn't it? We can look at those times when we feel that kind of sorrow, despair, and doubt as an opening to being receptive to finding a higher way, to finding what we don't know in that moment, what we're not accessing in that moment. Or you can be incapacitated by your doubt. The mind can continue to go back and forth, until you just abdicate and say, eh, I'll just do this without making an actual breakthrough. So what's needed is a breakthrough. Arjuna turns to Krishna and he makes that declaration of the impossibility before him and his decision to abdicate, to say, I'm just not going to do anything. That's one of the choices he sees. I'm not going to do it. And the other choice he sees is, I am going to do it. But he doesn't really see that as an option. It's a battle. So the message of the Bhagavad Gita is about the art of living. It's about skillful living. It's about seeing a third way. It's not about doing or not doing. It's about skillfully living right where you are. in the situation that we find ourselves. There's this choice that comes to us, this third way. Then the wisdom teachings, which are the foundation for that, begin like a step back, out of the middle of it. The mind is going between these two things, this or that, and then there's the laughter, like, okay, let's chill out, let's step back here. Let's gain a new perspective. Then that perspective comes from the Lord Krishna, from the higher self. It is what is seen in the classic teachings of yoga, which is the mountaintop view, the higher view of what this life really is. So we must have that foundation in order to live skillfully, in order to see how to practice the art of living right amidst where we are. Therefore, the antidote to doubt, the way to stop the mind from its restless moving one option to the next, is to seek higher truth. That's what we see happening. That's what Arjuna finally does. He turns to Krishna and says, "Help me!" Do you remember that moment? I do. Yesterday. And 35 years ago. Help me. As I was contemplating this, as Yogacharya O'Brien was contemplating this, a prayer came that brought this to the heart of the teaching. And that is, may all my prayers become one prayer. May all my prayers become one prayer to know you as you are, and myself as I am. May all my prayers become one prayer to know you, Lord Krishna, as you are, and myself as I truly am. When we have that prayer, we can ask ourselves, what will my choice be in the light of who I truly am? What will my choice be of how I live? And Krishna begins the teaching with verse 2:11. He speaks to Arjuna about who is truly wise. He says, one is truly wise when they see into the impermanence of things in the world. Krishna begins with that. Then he says to Arjuna, you're using words as if you are wise, but you don't really know, because if you really knew, you wouldn't be in this confusion about how to live. Krishna says, you have mourned those that you should not mourn, and you speak as if with wisdom. The wise do not mourn for the dead or for the living. Then this verse, chapter 2, verse 12, she says, I suggest you write it down and put it out somewhere where you can really reflect on it. It's one of the most beautiful verses in the Gita. 2:12. Truly, there was never a time when I was not, nor you, nor these lords of men, nor anyone else. Truly, there was never a time when I was not, nor you, nor these lords of men, nor anyone else, and neither will there be a time when we shall cease to be. Truly, there was never a time when I was not, nor you, nor these lords of men, nor anyone else, and neither will there be a time when we shall cease to be. From this time onward, you are an immortal being. From this time onward, you are an immortal being. Bhagavad Gita, as a guide to how to live skillfully, has this as its foundation. First, of course, know that you are a spiritual being. And then it states the highest truth of our being is to know what is real and what is unreal. What is unchanging? What is absolute reality? And what is impermanent? What is subject to change? And that does not mean that what we experience in this world is unreal. It's real, but it has no absolute substance. In other words, it is continually going to change. That's what we need to know about it. It is going to continually change. It will never remain changeless. Here's this teaching. The first thing you know is there's dissatisfaction with life. I can't find a way to experience peace in this world. I can't find a way to experience peace in this world. And then the Lord begins with this teaching. First, we see that there is the unchanging, which is called real. Then there's the changing, the mutable, that which is continually changing. Everything in the world is undergoing that. Then the question is, how do we live in the world aware of the changeless in the midst of everything that changes all the time? How do we live in the world aware of the changeless in the midst of everything changing all the time? How do we relate? How do we live and maintain our balance? So, you know, yoga is balance. Yoga is equanimity. Remember, I started this talk with that 15th verse that says, one who can remain, can maintain their balance, is fit for immortality. One who can remain calm and maintain their balance is fit for immortality. You are already immortal. It's not that having this clarity is going to make you more immortal. No, it's going to let you live as an immortal being right where you are. What Lord Krishna, the higher self, is bringing to Arjuna is this art of living. How do you live as an immortal being in a world of constant change? In a world of relationships? Oh, I wish they'd give the straightforward answer. Well, they do. How do you know the truth of what you are and maintain your awareness of the true self? Doing what you need to do here in the world, not abdicating your responsibility, not trying to escape from your responsibility. Sidebar. We come to these points in our life that are intense, right? Mm-hmm. Where we don't really know what to do. And we know that there's a higher way. We know this, we can't quite see it. The answer is not to just remove ourselves. There's a third way. Yogacharya says, that's what Arjuna sees in the beginning. He says, well, I can do this thing that I don't want to do, that doesn't feel is the right thing to do, or I can abdicate. I can just say, I'm not gonna do it. I'm gonna take my ball away. But this teaching is really about the third way. It's about how to live skillfully, how to do what you are here to do. What is your dharma? What is your duty? What is your responsibility? How do you do that skillfully? How do you maintain your balance without abdicating? How do you maintain your balance as you engage in life? We're continually losing our balance, and that's just part of yoga. And then yoga is finding our balance again. So when we see Arjuna, I think one of those things, and I mentioned it before, is that in a way, reading the Gita and studying the Gita is like watching a Shakespearean drama. You have the broader viewpoint of seeing what's up with Arjuna. So we understand Arjuna because he's acting out in this scripture. He's an actor. He's acting out in what we do all the time. One of the things that we see with Arjuna in this scenario, where he has become trapped in the middle between his restless mind moving from this side to that side, is that he turns to the Lord, he asks for help. But what is very obvious to us is his willfulness. He says, I beg you, please help me. And then pretty much immediately he says, and by the way, I've already chosen. I'm not going to do this. He's really going to the Lord to ask permission to abdicate his responsibility. God, please help me. But not that way. He gives Lord Krishna all the knowledge that he has. Krishna points out to him in those early verses that Arjuna is talking like a wise person, but he doesn't seem to have any real wisdom. You don't really know because you don't see things as they really are. You're not seeing clearly. Arjuna cannot see clearly because he believes at that juncture that he already knows. He thinks that he already knows. So we have to remember that Krishna, the higher true self, is also Arjuna. They are one. There's a part of Arjuna that does know. This is where the pain comes for us, right? He does know that is now really beginning to reveal itself. It's beginning to reveal to him a higher way, the art of living. And it begins here with the teaching that life cannot be successfully lived on the basis, on the level of basic information, just knowledge. You literally cannot just read it in a book. There has to be a higher way, which is the way of truth that is beyond what the sense mind can discern, what the thinking mind can discern. There has to be an opening to this third way, this art of living, in which we open ourselves to revelation. In order to have that, of course, we have to let go. At first, it's useful to take the mind out into the field and say, okay, what am I facing here? What is the circumstance that I'm in? What is the challenge? What does it look like? What are my options? But if we really want to experience the art of living skillfully, we can't stop there because that's at the mundane level. You must remember that Krishna is in the chariot. The Lord of love is with us. We don't want to simply stay stuck out there with what we know, with what we think we know. So looking at what we think all the options are is useful. Yes, first take a look. Then, when you cannot find a solution, which is usually, it's time to open your heart and your mind to the infinite and begin to open to a higher way that is going to show you what the steps are to skillfully living right where you are. Not escaping from where you are, but right where you are. What are the skills and steps to skillful living? What we see in this chapter first is the teaching of the spiritual foundation. Like Jesus said, seek first the kingdom of God and God's righteousness, and all else will be added to you. First, we try to figure it out, and sometimes we can figure it out, and we just go forward. But sometimes we're in that crisis, and the mind is filled with doubt. Then what do we do? Well, we seek higher wisdom, and seeking higher wisdom requires letting go of what we believe the options should be. This is not easy sometimes, right? What Arjuna has done is he's already chosen one option. He says, I'm abdicating, I'm out of here. I'm not doing that. Krishna, could you help me with my choice? I've already chosen, could you help me? I always say that's sort of like trying to hire the Lord as your subcontractor instead of saying, here I am. Here I am, show me the way. So it's surrender. And it's also understanding what surrender is. We have a beautiful example in the Gita, because in some ways you can say, well, Arjuna has surrendered, right? He's given up, he's thrown down the bow. But we're in the gallery view of this drama. And we can see that Arjuna indeed has not surrendered. He's thrown down his bow, but he has said, this is what I see, this is what I know, this is what I'm going to do. Surrender is not abdicating. Surrender is not giving up. That's Arjuna's first tactic. Uncle, I give. Surrender is giving over. It's giving over the reins to the Lord of love, to the higher self, giving over the reins of the mind and the reins of our choice, and saying, I don't know what to do. I can't choose between this or that. Show me the higher way. From there, we go forward into the teachings about how to quiet the mind so that the higher way can be revealed. And that will be our topic next time. So I have just a few comments to make in addition to all my sidebars. First of all, wow. We find ourselves in this situation so many times throughout the day, don't we? Especially in relationships that we feel confrontive, or, that's a good way to say it, I think. And when we step back in the drama, we can see that those relationships are actually a way for our awakening to occur, if we can surrender and let God guide us. Many spiritual seekers never make it past the confusion, doubt, and inner turmoil that arise when confronted with the path of higher wisdom. So like Arjuna in chapter 1 of the Gita, they feel paralyzed, torn between what we thought we knew and the unknown that lies ahead. However, those with humility to acknowledge their own uncertainty take this crucial step in being ready to receive the divine song, the teachings from the Lord. And this is where chapter 2 begins. The opening of this chapter, something remarkable happens. Krishna smiles. I love that. Except when I do it myself and the guru just laughs or smiles. Although if we stay long enough, we can let go. The smile is not one of ridicule or amusement, but of deep wisdom. It signifies that Arjuna's brief moment of surrender has opened the door for divine guidance. That the moment the seeker admits, I don't know, they become teachable. So Arjuna has taken this step. He's dropped his own limited understanding and asks Krishna, I'm confused about my duty. Tell me what's truly best for me. This is the first sacred moment of surrender. And yet, even after this step, he still resists. He still says, I will not fight. Ugh. You know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. We're in a situation, something inside of us, our higher self says, even though this feels difficult, I should surrender, keep my heart open, and take this step. I don't know what the outcome's going to be, but we abdicate. We say, well, yoga is about balance, so I'm just going to remove myself and be balanced. This is one of my least favorite things about myself and others. Using spiritual teachings to justify inappropriate action. Doesn't this sound familiar? Krishna understands the situation Arjuna's in, and he does not shame him for his doubt. Instead, Krishna begins to reveal the teachings of the eternal nature of the self, of the soul, teaching Arjuna that he's not merely his body or his mind that's filled with fear, but he is the imperishable Atma, the self that was never born and will never die. So this teaching is central to Samkhya Yoga, which lays the foundation for the Bhagavad Gita's wisdom. Without this knowing, we can go nowhere. The next several chapters simply point back to this. You are it. Krishna explains, just as we pass through childhood, adulthood, and old age, so too does the soul pass through lifetimes untouched by external changes. And this realization shifts Arjuna's perspective. Right? When we have that moment, that aha, just briefly, our perspective opens. And instead of being overwhelmed by temporary suffering, Krishna urges Arjuna to stand in his dharma, his righteous duty, and act without attachment to results. This is a difficult situation. I don't know what this other person is actually going to do, but I'm going to stand in my dharma anyway. You know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I think Uma would say to this, Oi, Veda. This is the beginning of our transformation. It's the beginning of Arjuna's transformation, and Yogacharya O'Brien's guru, Roy Eugene Davis, would teach that the way to freedom is to wake up, to grow up, and to show up. To clearly discern what is true and unchanging, and to surrender our ego-centered attachments and live with higher purpose. I love that. Wake up, grow up, and show up. But it's not like, wake up, grow up, and show up. It's like, wake up, grow up, show up. When we receive this guidance from the higher source, whether in scripture, a teacher, our guru, or inner realization, our role is to have faith, to endure the tests, and to trust this unfolding process that will lead us to higher truth. So as we reflect on these verses, we can ask ourselves, where do we hesitate and abdicate like Arjuna does? Are we truly surrendering, or are we really still resisting, being self-righteous? Are we willing to trust the guidance given to us and step forward even when doubt lingers? Krishna's smile reminds us that divine wisdom is always available. And the question is, are we ready to listen? Yesterday, Uma's daily inspiration was perfect. It comes down to faith. Faith is confidence in the infinite. It is our willingness to look through the appearance of separation and see only unity, see only God. Faith is the willingness to look at whatever is before us and say, God is appearing as all that is. One reality, only one, not two. Om. Mm. Holy macro. She gave us a mouthful, didn't she? That was a lot. So we have a few moments for your reflections, ahas, uh-ohs, yahoos. So if anyone online wants to share, you can raise your virtual hand, or if you don't know how, you can go like this. If we see you, we will ask you to turn your mic on, or anyone in the room. I was going to say, was it too much to make a comment?
Woohoo.
Vivica?
Vivica? Please unmute yourself.
Good morning and good day. I don't know where everybody is, but thank you, Sundari, for the beautiful sharing of Umaji's teachings. I wanted to share a little game that Natasha, my wife, and I do together. It's a little set of cards called The Meaning of Life. And the other day we had a card that said, if you dared, what would you be more like? It's a good question. And I can't remember exactly what Natasha said, and it's not mine to share. But, you know, I was immediately sort of thrown back into these teachings. And I said, well, you know, I'd be more like Yogacharya O'Brien. And she said, well, how is that daring? And I said, well, I'd have to let go of all of my stories that keep me separate from you. And, you know, and that's the battle, you know, of being the, this third way also reminds me of the third bird in the tree, right? You know, it's making that other choice that's sort of a combination of both, but using our discernment to reach that place and being willing to surrender that story that we know is our story and is just trying to keep us safe, but isn't really keeping us safe at all. So thank you.
Thank you. Beautiful. It is quite interesting, isn't it? How it's really our ego can make up a story and tell us that it's protecting us. Right? That it's real, that no, you don't know, Sundari. You don't know what I really have gone through. I mean, you don't really know, Uma, what's really going on. If you really knew, you'd understand why I behave this way. And then Uma laughs, right? Oh boy. But our ego really, well, what it's really trying to do is maintain control. Because it thinks it's going to die.
It is.
Well, it actually takes a very strong ego to become liberated. But it must be an ego that's surrendered to higher guidance. So it's gonna die in the sense of thinking it's in charge of everything. But to live in this realm of duality, the ego is necessary. So we're not trying to get rid of it. And it's sort of like well, I got a call on my watch, and so I lost my train of thought. So we'll let Mukti go, and it'll come back to me.
Thank you so much for all of these teachings, Sundari. I loved, one of the things you said brings up to me a question that has been in my mind a lot lately. You said our relationships are actually a way for our awakening to occur. And there's some relationships in my life that are very challenging, and I tend to pull away from them. Or there are, as we know, things going on in the world that are very difficult to see. And I'm having a little trouble discerning, you know, I know that, you know, my job is always including my sadhana, meditation, prayer. And yet, because I also know that ultimately I'm learning to remain conscious of God, my Dharma, the highest way, even in the midst of sometimes even the panic of what's going on. I've had a lot of, you know, really strong reactions to things. So what I would love to hear is, well, I guess it's the same thing you said. Where is the third way? That not the way that says, okay, I'm only going to do my sadhana. I'm not going to participate in the world. I didn't even want to look at the news for 4 years as part of my first, you know, inclination. And yet I'm realizing that that is not my role right now, to just hide from the world while whatever goes on goes on. And yet, maintaining my challenge is actually my equanimity.
That's right.
So how could you help say more about that, please? That's the hard part, is my equanimity.
So, anyone else? Anyone else have this situation going on? Yes, of course. We are so blessed to have a living guru. And so we watch Uma's example. Now, she's on sabbatical this year, so we're not watching it this year. But how many years have we had with her to watch and to remember her example? And her telling us many times, we need to watch the news. I'm with you on this, by the way, finding this way. We need to watch the news or listen to the news, however we do it, read the news, enough to stay informed. But whether we're watching MSNBC or CNN or Fox, whatever our place of watching the news is, we get the same story five times from five different people. Once is enough. Once is enough. What I do is, you know, I drive to and from the center. So once a day, on the hour, if I'm driving, at the start of an hour, I turn on the radio, because what I want to know is there a big tragedy somewhere? An earthquake, a flood, a hurricane, a fire? Is there a, you know, because that's, they talk about that at the top of the hour. And if there are other political things that are really intense, there's so much going on that if we try to pay attention to every single thing, we get lost in all the tributaries, in the chaos of it all. So we have to be aware that at a high level. So, you know, we can be aware at a high level. We don't have to know every story, that there's a sort of dismantling going on in our nation. But we don't know about the future. We don't yet know about the future. So we need to stay in the present, stay where we are. And you know how light shines into darkness? Mm-hmm. If you have one match that's lit and all these other matches that are not, they don't have their light shining, when you bring your light into the middle of it, the lights of the others near you start glimmering. And then what happens? There's another round of light. So we have to stay awake and aware, bring our consciousness into the world, and not fall into the trap of all the drama. We are divinely blessed for the next 4 years. Really, think about it. The challenge and opportunity we have to truly walk the spiritual path and not abdicate, not just give up, but be present, be aware, but don't fall into the pit of despair. Wah, wah, wah. Now, there's that whole political thing, and then there's our relationships. Oh my goodness. I find it really helpful to look at all of that as a blessing for my own awakening. It's not an easy thing to do, but it's essential. And I also look at things from a spiritual view. You know, you look at the yugas, which are thousands and thousands of years. 4 years is nothing. We have to look at the big picture. We are at this juncture in the yugas of beginning to move into the light. We've come through this time of ignorance and darkness. We're at this bottom point. We've come from here. We've come all the way around. We're at this bottom point, and we're just barely beginning to come into the time of the light. When you make that kind of change in your life, chaos is necessary. To have transformation, chaos is necessary. So if we take the very big, high, deep, consciously aware view, while it's uncomfortable, this chaos is necessary for us to move more into the enlightened age in the yugas. For those who don't know what the yugas are, I'm so sorry. I don't know what to tell you. I'll try to teach a class on it at some point. But it tells about the journey of humanity moving through all of the time of creation, from a time of inception and awakeness to a time of darkness and despair and total unknowing, doubt, throwing down the bow, all of that, back again to an awakened age. Thousands and thousands of years for each stage. So if we think just about our own life, or for those with children, you watch them grow. When they transform from an adolescent to an adult, there's a time of individuation. And there's a friction and chaos that occurs for that transformation. Does that make sense? So take a higher view, be aware. If you're inclined to go to a march, but not with anger.
Yeah.
With your little match lit.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are others, many others, who don't know what to do. So we bring our light wherever we are, we let it shine, we don't hide it, but we don't bring arrogance or anger. You know the saying, what you resist persists.
Mm-hmm.
So if you push against something, it gives an energy to be pushed back. If you just bring yourself, there's nothing to push back against. Okay, my beautiful friends from Santa Rosa, well, two of them. There are many Santa Rosans there. Hi, Bob and Nancy.
Hi.
Hi. My motto in this kind of thing is stay informed, but not overwhelmed. Just talked about. And in equanimity, today's daily inspiration from Uma is exactly on that point. So if you haven't read it yet, give it a shot.
Yes, it is, isn't it? We are in the stream. And the other thing we're in the stream about is the next attunement. Oh, you didn't have to leave altogether. The next attunement satsang and practice is about bringing the guru into your life. And so it is about how to meditate on the teacher or your guru and have your life be more embodied by that. So it's perfect timing. That's what March 2nd, I think.
I love the last line of her inspiration. It says, and seeing with the eyes of love and wisdom.
Well, thank you all for your kind attention, your reflections. I see you taking notes madly. I started with, is everything okay? I see some sign up there.
Everything's great. It just says you're talking.
Oh, thank you. You know, I wanted to start these Gita studies right away in the beginning of the year because it's going to take a year to get through them. But I also want you to know that in our planning, we decided to also